Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Celtics Lab podcast, brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network and BetterHelp. You deserve to be happy. I'm Cameron Tiptoe. I'm joined by Dr. Justin Quinn. Alex Goldberg is on tour with Divine Sweater. Check him out. And we got the NBA draft coming up on Thursday. So to talk about that and a few other things, we bring in our friend from For the Win and USA Today, Brian Kilbrowski. Brian, how are you?
I'm good. The draft is in Brooklyn. The only one that I've missed since I've moved here is the one that was the COVID year, which was actually probably the draft that I followed the closest because it'd be such a long draft cycle. But I always love when all the prospects start arriving into town and we start getting some in-person events. So I'll be doing some stuff in person tomorrow with, I think, Grady Dick, and the next few days should be really fun. I've got red carpet for Thursday, which will be great. And I know Victor Wembanyama just landed in New York about an hour ago. Yeah, it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, the reason my intro is extra fast is because we got a lot on our plate and I want to get right to it. And I'm going to throw all of that out the window to think about what it's like to be Victor Wembanyama on a continental flight, because it's going to be miserable. I mean, even on a private plane, they're not that... I can't imagine. I'm so excited to see this person in real life. I don't know. I'm just floored by this kid. Anyways, we're going to talk about the draft, which is on Thursday. And Brian, you've been talking to prospects, you've been scouting who's been working out with whom, and obviously we'll focus on what the Celtics might be up to. But before we do that, we're going to talk about some of the trades, some of the coaching hires, and I guess a little peek at Summer League as well. So Brian, I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast knows that Bradley Beal is headed to Phoenix. Chris Paul, for the moment, is headed to Washington alongside Landry Shamet, and Phoenix exhausted every other draft pick trade and trick they could possibly pull. Just what do you think? What are your thoughts on the trade about a day removed?
I would say I hate it for both sides. It's a good trade. Exactly. I really can't believe how terribly the situation was managed in Washington to let Beal get to the point where his value was that low. If they had decided to pull the plug earlier, and this is not on the new management, you know, this is obviously fixing someone else's mess, but that's on Tommy Shepard for letting it get to that point. And tanking for the 2024 draft, which doesn't have the marquee prospect that this year's had. You know, if they had just tanked, if they had just done this trade last year, they could have gotten, you know, more value and also gotten a better odds of getting Wembanyama. They almost got Wembanyama this year. I don't know if you just saw, but they were like one ping pong ball away. It was like a lot of different combinations that could have gone to Washington, and the one that it went to was actually San Antonio. That would have increased their luck there. Even still, I mean, they could have had a real shot at Scoot Henderson, who's a franchise building block, Brandon Miller, and they didn't do that. Now, I mean, just from the draft perspective, I think they should all in Washington keep their fingers crossed for a Thompson twin to drop to them. Either one, I think, preferably for them, Amen Thompson, but I really don't think that'll happen. And then Phoenix, I mean, from a draft perspective, there's nothing to say about them ever. They've traded every second round pick and first round pick they could possibly trade, and they don't really use the draft anyway. They've said so on record, actually, if I believe to ESPN a couple of years ago in the future. But, you know, from a roster building perspective, I don't really particularly understand it from Phoenix's perspective either. You're getting a similar player to Devin Booker. And I think Bradley Beal's being underrated in these discussions lately. He's a tremendous scorer, but scoring's not really the problem that I think I would project Phoenix to have next season with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker on the roster. So I would definitely try to reroute Ayton and try to get a real point guard. And, you know, I think have just Booker and Beal on the wing. But, you know, either way, I mean, I think it's a confusing trade for me. And obviously the Bartlestein connection with Phoenix and Washington is really strong with this one. And that's kind of my first thought right when it happened was just must have been just Beal really flexing that no trade clause. And I don't think we'll see any no trade clause used in the NBA by front offices anytime soon after seeing the way the team was managed. Because I think, I think if they really were trying to get him somewhere, they could have gotten at least probably Tyler Hero. And that's much more value than Landry Shamet and Chris Paul's expiring. So, it's a weird one. And I don't think it'll change the draft too much. The one note I do want to add on the draft for this, and I know I've been going on for a while now, is a lot of the rumors about who Washington likes so far is Anthony Black out of Arkansas. I'm a huge Anthony Black fan. I think he could be a much more athletic, more point guardy version of Kyle Anderson. I think Anthony Black's a connector. I think he's much more of a player that would do well in a team that could potentially make the playoffs next year, an Oklahoma City or Utah or New Orleans or one of those teams that's in the lottery, Portland even, but not necessarily, looking to rebuild completely. Washington's tearing it down. Kristaps is going to get traded probably on Thursday. Anthony Black is, I mean, I think he's a great culture guy. And I think he's somebody who I would like to have on my roster, no doubt. My first pick that I'm going to use, I would like somebody who I could really give the ball to. It's like, okay, this is our first pick since we traded Beal, since in the post John Wall era, really, post John Wall, Bradley Beal era. I want to draft a point guard who can really take the ball off the court and make some plays for my team for real. And I think Anthony Black is a player who personally was really high on my big board, but for Washington specifically, if I'm going to scrap it down, tear it up for parts, I'm looking at the Thompson twins and I'm looking at Kobe Bufkin at Michigan. That's who I have in my mock right now. I don't really think that anybody else has Kobe there quite high, but I think that they should at least take a real hard look at him because I think he's a real guard who could actually play that type of a role. And I'd prefer to see Anthony Black on a team that, has more of a winning mindset right away.
Yeah, that's not the wizard.
No,
Not
it's
for a
not. And
while.
yet he's being mocked there by pretty much everybody today. So, Jonathan Wasserman from Bleacher Report says league circles believe that Black is going to be the pick. Something about that doesn't feel right to me. And I think that Kobe Bufkin should be getting a little bit more looks there. And I'm not sure if he will actually get picked there, but I think that someone like Kobe or one of the Thompson twins would be my pick if I'm Washington.
Dr. Quinn, what about the Phoenix side of the equation? What are your initial reactions to what the Suns are going to look like next season?
New owner wants to make big splash, makes bad decision, basically. It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out because all the second rounders, the pick swaps, those are kind of indicative of me of what we will probably be seeing iterations of in trades moving forward because of how, we can talk about this a little bit more later, the new CBA is going to impact team building. But I think we might have just seen like the test case for what not to do, at least in terms of taking on salary. Or at least we're going to see just how bad the punitive aspects of this are going to be for building a super team.
I mean, I suppose it's one of those things, especially for a franchise like Phoenix, where one championship makes it all go away. But goodness, if they don't win one, that's gonna look really bad. Yeah, Brian, to your point, I don't know. Beal, Durant, and Booker could all score 30 points in a game, and Phoenix could still get outscored by 15 because no one's playing defense down in the valley. I like all the players individually, and that's a lot of money and not a lot of defense. Okay. Anyways, he was never going to the Celtics fans, but even if you hoped he did, let's put that to bed because it's behind us. Keeping things focused on Boston, they just hired Phil Pressey as an assistant who played for the team in 2013, 14, and 15. According to Adam Himmelsbeck of the Boston Globe, we just had a report out that we'll get to more so. Boston's expected to sign at least another assistant sometime soon. Brian, we've asked a couple of people this, but I'll ask you the same. What's your take on the criticisms of Joe Mazzulla's bench last year, and where do you think they're at now?
I wasn't really a fan of the coaching job that I saw from the Celtics last year, but given the context, it's so understandable. Just considering everything that they did to or just how little preparation time they did and how much they lost on the bench too. Just with the assistants leaving as well to get head coaching jobs. There was just so much movement over there in such a short amount of time that, I think Joe Mazzulla did a really good job of keeping the guys engaged and having a winning record. To me, it felt a little bit in the beginning of the year like he was getting a little bit of that Luke Walton effect where it was like, oh, Mazzulla's doing a great job. These guys are doing so well. And I was like, I think that maybe, either you two probably could have coached Tatum and Brown to a winning record early in the season because of how talented that roster is and how, well they were playing off of the chemistry they've built for the last several years. It's harder to do that during the playoffs. And I think that's when coaching really comes into light. And that's why you see Spoelstra make the Eastern Conference Finals, however many years in a row. And why you see Spoelstra, do so well over so many years now is he's clearly a great tactical coach. And I think, Mike Malone obviously is as well. Obviously, he's got the huge advantage there with someone, like Jokic on the roster. But I think Malone has done a tremendous job in Denver too. Mazzulla, I wasn't really a fan of the timeout decisions and all of that. But also, for me, in terms of my writing and my professional career, I've always hated, I think, one of the things the most is criticizing coaches and referees. Not because I think that they're, it's just like, to me, it's like, I don't know. Everyone's got a reason for what they're doing here. And if I don't have the better answer, Joe Mazzulla knows a lot more about basketball than I do. And I think that he certainly was dealt a tough hand, but they've really done a great job building that bench back up. I think that especially the assistance that they've gotten for their lead, with Charles Lee, if that's his name. Charles Lee was obviously from Milwaukee the a favorite for many of the coaching positions that for head coaching position. And I figured he wasn't going to leave until he could get a head coaching job. So, I think that that's kind of got some like Ime Udoka vibes from a few years ago in terms of just, where Ime's standing was in the league. He was like considered to be, the next assistant to become a head coach. And so he didn't get that. I think it's going to be a big hit for Milwaukee losing that as well as Adrian Griffin, as well as, Budenholzer. Or not Adrian Griffin, Adrian Griffin's the new head coach. I've got so many things in my mind. Forgive me. Either way, you know what I'm saying. A lot of transition going on in Milwaukee, a lot of talent going on to the bench in Boston. Phil was just a coach in the college ranks, right?
Missouri, excuse me, yeah.
Yeah, he coached Kobe Brown, who's one of the targets that I would actually like a lot for the Celtics. And I think
Oh,
that
that's interesting.
yeah, that's something that I always keep an eye on. He's one of the prospects that I've interviewed for my draft prospect series. And obviously, I don't think Brad's going to come in and immediately give the first draft pick that they have in this draft to the new assistant coach. But it's at least worth monitoring because Kobe Brown is somebody who I think checks a lot of boxes for a lot of teams. Somebody who I think Brad would like. So I keep an eye on Kobe Brown. He's also older. He's like a win now kind of a player.
Oh, I have to, that's why you're here. I would never have made that connection to a Pressy. Before we get into the draft stuff, Justin, what are we getting out of Pressy as a coach, other than perhaps this connection to this prospect?
Well, I mean, he's got the connection to the team. Both he and his dad played for the Celtics. And I mean, it's going to be weird because he played with Marcus Smart and now he's going to be coaching him after Marcus Smart has like resoundingly had a much better career. But he does have the experience playing in the league. So it's going to be another voice in the Damon Stoudamire kind of vibe where if they hear it from him, they're not going to tune it out the same kind of way that some players might tune out something from somebody who's never played in the NBA, for example.
Yeah, not every assistant needs to have the ear of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I mean, JD Davison needs a go guy. I mean, there's a lot of people on this team that need coaching besides the top people. So if he can be helpful in behind the scenes stuff with the younger guys, that totally works. Okay, we're mostly here to talk about the draft. So let me just kind of recap this Himmelsbeck piece that came out a little bit. And basically, the reason I'm doing that is because it recaps a lot of, I think, what we know. According to the Boston Globe, according to Adam, Boston is indeed looking to change the backcourt rotation, that there's a little bit of a logjam there. But importantly, according to a source that talked to the Globe, I'm quoting, financial obligations will not guide the roster decisions, as in, it's not that they're going to try to cut Malcolm Brogdon's salary for the sake of cutting salary. It's that a rotational wing or a big would make more sense than having four playable guards. So Brogdon and Peyton Pritchard continue to be the names to monitor, but it sounds as if Boston's taking a lot of calls there. The Globe is also reporting that Grant Williams is likely back in Boston. However, teams have called about possible sign-in trades, and I'm sure there are teams with cap space that might throw an offer his way. The Pacers reportedly have interest in Grant Williams. The Mavs also, although I don't really know. I don't think anyone knows what's going on with the Dallas Mavericks right now, including the Dallas Mavericks. So the news around Boston continues to be a little consistent heading into the draft. And I suspect a lot will happen in this draft that changes the landscape of the NBA. So all of this could be stale or outdated by Friday. But for now, that's where things sit. I want to talk about Isaiah Stewart, but before we do that, Justin, anything I missed with the Globe reporting or any other Celtics news as of late?
Nothing that we can't cover in our next segment. I think it'll be good to zoom through a ton of stuff that's out there right now. And some of it is pretty interesting. Some of it sounds like complete nonsense.
Cool. Let's pause the action and talk about Isaiah Stewart, though, because this has been your offseason muse. And Brian, you actually had a pre-draft workout or conversation with, although I guess, I don't know, maybe you got a little sweaty at the same time, a conversation with Isaiah Stewart. So Justin, first of all, why do you think Boston should target a player like Beef Stew? And then Brian will ask you if Justin's instincts are correct.
Well, I mean, for one, for purely mechanical reasons, the front court rotation is thin. The ability of somebody who can actually hit a three-point shot on occasion next to someone like Rob would be really, really helpful to keep Al Horford's minutes down, because if they don't find someone like that, we know what Joe Mazzulla is going to do with poor Al Horford's legs, which we don't want to have happen. And then from more of a chemistry perspective, many, many, many people have made the correct observation that this is a very nice team, other than maybe Marcus Smart and I don't know, Al Horford, when the one day he's actually mad at someone. Apart from that, they really need someone who isn't necessarily exactly an enforcer, though you could argue that Beef Stew could fill that role if he wanted to. He's a little bit more of a finesse player than that. But his intensity is like a big man version of Marcus Smart. And I think that would be an incredibly valuable player to have on this roster. But so do the Pistons.
So do the Pistons. Brian, anything Justin missed in terms of Isaiah Stewart's player profile? Not that there's much reporting around this. This is really Justin's mission this offseason.
Yeah, I actually want to say specifically that I remember, you know, Isaiah Stewart was like the number one, number two player in the country coming out of high school, and really fell after struggling at Washington. He was in the wrong defensive system for him. They were playing a lot of zone. It just didn't work for him at all, and he slid a lot in mock projection, sometimes second round. I vividly remember having him mock to Boston every time I did a mock draft at 14, specifically to Boston. They used to pick on Aaron Nesmith, and obviously it's not what ended up happening. But now that Detroit has such an overload in the front court, I wouldn't be surprised at all for them to shop him. When I spoke to Isaiah Stewart, it was like a battle rapper. Like the way, the candidness that he was giving me was absolutely insane. Like I had never heard anything like this from a prospect. The way he was calling people out, saying people are ducking me in workouts, they're saying, because I'm busted there, you know what, and workouts every time they didn't want to see me, they wouldn't play me in games, you know, just all sorts of stuff that like I want it more than everybody. Like he's a lunatic. Like he really is like a crazy MF-er out there. And I think that you saw that when he went after LeBron James in a way that we've never seen in LeBron's 20 years in the league. You know, this is a guy who's going to put in the work. This is a guy who's going to bring in a level of intensity. This is a guy who's going to scrap. This is a guy who's going to get in your head. And I think, you know, the three-point shooting is obviously the swing skill set. But from a culture perspective, I love bringing in Isaiah Stewart and just making them a little crazier. I mean, he's not mean, but on the court, he definitely is. And especially if you've got Grant Williams too, coming back next year too, with, you know, kind of approaching it from a different angle with more of the like research based, trash talking, and Isaiah Stewart's just straight up trash talking. I think you've got coming at you both from both corners in the front court. That'd be a lot of fun. And I think that, you know, Isaiah Stewart has had a, I think not underwhelming NBA career, but just you're not hearing much about it in Boston in Detroit. And I think maybe you would hear his name a lot more if he was in a rotation for Boston.
Yeah, I hope the Pistons, whether Beef Stew is part of that team or not, find another gear because it's getting a little sad. Okay, a few more pieces of news and then we'll get into this draft stuff, and this is a good bridge. So reportedly, the Indiana Pacers are shopping the number 7 pick. They also reportedly have interest in Grant Williams. That probably isn't a perfect match, but maybe there's some juice there. Before we fold Boston into it, Brian, what do you think of Indiana shopping this number 7 pick just writ large?
I think if Taylor Hendricks or Jairus Walker both get selected before Indiana's on the clock, then it makes some sense to me. If either of them were there, I'd be a little bit more surprised, especially Walker. I think that I'm personally a little higher, I think, on Walker than Hendricks, but I think Hendricks is very good as well. And I think that if I were Indiana, I would just do that. Like I would just take either of them. But at the same time, if you look at the physical builds of the guys that Detroit has drafted recently, a lot of guys on the Detroit roster look a lot like Jairus Walker in terms of just being like physically cut and just NFL style bodies. And Walker, I think, would fit really well with that. Whitmore is the other guy who I think is also just like a 100th percentile athlete, and also either of the Thompson twins, more so Amen Thompson in terms of the athleticism. But I think that Detroit and Troy Weaver, even since his time in Oklahoma City, have really valued athleticism. And so the guys you're going to be looking at in Detroit are going to be Cam Whitmore and Amen Thompson and Jairus Walker. And so if they land on Walker, and then let's say one of the next picks is Hendricks, then Indiana doesn't have the power forward of the future that they want. I think that's when they make a trade. But the reporting suggests that Indiana's looking for a strong, physically built, like not necessarily offense first power forward, because they have some offense in the backcourt with Haliburton and Benedict Mathurin and all of that. So I would suggest keeping that pick if those guys are there. But if they go beforehand, then see what the value is. But there's going to be a lot of chatter about a lot of picks, so I never know what to make about any of them.
Dustin, is there any chance or motivation for Boston to get in on that if that pick becomes available?
Well, the only path I could reasonably see for something like that coming available would be a sign and trade of Grant Williams. Presumably they are interested. There's a little bit of reporting, as we've touched on, about that. He doesn't feel like the kind of player, the more we talk through this with Brian just now, that would really fit that role. I mean, he's defensive first and he's a really capable defender, but he's also kind of small. And if they're going to get beat up on the boards, that doesn't seem like necessarily the very best option that they could go for. Though you could squint and see a starting level player with Grant if you give him enough time. But anything like that would be a sign and trade that also involves other assets, probably a first round pick that's, comparably, practically a second round pick, going back to them, and another interesting player like Sam Hauser. And at that point, it starts to get kind of like, I don't know if it makes sense for Boston to do either. So talking through it, as interesting as that sounds, I don't really think it's super plausible unless it's exactly what the Pacers want.
My question there would really be if Kevin Pritchard would want to coach Peyton, or would want Peyton Pritchard on the roster, just with the Pritchard connection.
Yeah, I thought about that. He hates the
Let's
Celtics.
I mean, not enough to not give him Malcolm Brogdon. I don't know. I have worries about Pritchard, but that's another podcast. Okay, a few more newsy things and then let's get into the lab. So according to Himmelsbeck, Jan Madar, and ooh, I haven't said your name in a while. I hope I pronounce it right. Juan Beguerin, the French kid.
Juhan Beguerin, as far as I know.
So God, I'm going to Montreal in 2 weeks. It's going to be horrible. They're not going to be at Summer League for Boston, which is a little surprising, I suppose. Brian, will you be at Summer League?
Maybe.
Yeah,
Maybe.
I'm also in the maybe camp right now. Okay, last question, and then we'll do an ad read, and then we will talk about Boston's draft day decisions. Just because, Brian, you're dialed into this stuff, and because he's only been in the league for so many years, so it's like almost draft news. Brian, do you think Zion Williamson is a member of the Pelicans on Friday? Why or why not?
I, for the sake of my job, I really hope he is, because I would like to be a part of that news cycle. But Thursday, I'll be dancing around the hallways of Barclays Center trying to do a million things at once, and we'll be a mess on the news desk at our publication if I'm not able to help on that. So I certainly hope that if they trade him, they wait. But I think there is some smoke to the fire of the Scoot Henderson infatuation. I get it. I fully get it. I'm not a believer in trading an asset at its lowest value. And I think this is Zion's lowest value in the league right now. And I think that you could have gotten more for, I mean, this is the Bradley Beal conversation all over again that I had from earlier today, but I think that you could have gotten more from Zion any other time in his career besides right now. The question is, can it get lower than this? And I think the answer to that is yes. So in that case, I would say that if you think it's going to get worse than this, if you really do, then I would punt and get Scoot Henderson while you can, because you probably can get Scoot Henderson. Like I do personally believe that Charlotte is going to take Brandon Miller. I'm not 100% confident on that, but I will keep that mock that way until I really hear something otherwise. But I think that, based on the conversations that I've had, it seems it's going to be Brandon Miller at two to Charlotte. Now Charlotte could trade out. That's also an option. Maybe Washington wants to trade up and try to get Scoot as well, whatever it might be, or Brandon. But I think that Charlotte goes with Brandon Miller, and I think that Portland would definitely accept an offer for Zion Williamson for the free pick and whatever other package that would include. Presumably Simons, maybe Nurkic. I don't know if they would want to throw in Shaedon Sharpe, but I do think that they would. I do think they would definitely try to get Zion Williamson in a way that other teams maybe wouldn't. Another team that I really wouldn't be shocked to see with Zion Williamson would be Houston. They're going for it next year, I think. They've got a lot of assets to consolidate. And I think that, with James Harden potentially coming, likely coming, and the pick being owed to Oklahoma City next year, more likely than not, that four pick would also be an interesting option to consider, as well as some of the other, tertiary assets. Now, the guy at that point that I really wouldn't want to give up from Houston is Tari Eason. I'm a huge Tari Eason believer. I think that he's really, really underrated. When I interviewed Ernie Johnson, I asked if there's anybody in the league that he kind of just wanted to shout out, and Tari Eason was the one player Ernie Johnson mentioned too. I think that Tari needs to get a little bit more love than he's getting. I think that he had a season kind of similar to Herb Jones during Herb's rookie year, and Herb got a lot of shine for it. And Tari didn't. And I think that it makes sense. Houston was kind of a dumpster fire last year. But I think that I would really try to hold on to Tari Eason if I'm Houston. As for, some of the other guys on that Houston roster, I think pretty much everybody would be pretty expendable if I've got now a core of James Harden and Zion Williamson and probably at least some of the assets that I was able to hold on to. So yeah, I think that that's kind of what I'd be thinking. I think that ultimately New Orleans gets cold feet and doesn't do anything, because it's a really big move to trade someone as, franchise altering as Zion Williamson. Unless you're really, really sure that Scoot Henderson is that guy for you. And as far as I know, Scoot hasn't had a workout with the Pelicans or anything. I don't think he's been, I don't think he's been to the facility. Maybe they're able to like really sneak one in privately under the radar in the next like day or two. Although Scoot's already probably in New York, so if they really want him, they'll get eyes on him, they'll get his medical, whatever. But there aren't really medical concerns with Scoot too much. I mean, he missed some of the season, but mostly it was just like, let's just kind of shut it down. So I don't think there are too many real and actual concerns here. So I'm really curious to see what New Orleans does. I think I would hold, but I wouldn't blame them for trading.
Yeah, I intellectually agree with all of that, but Zion's averaged like 24 games a season. I mean, I know it hasn't been that long, but I don't know. There's something about that relationship that seems impossible to imagine succeeding moving forward. But this is not the Pelicans Lab podcast. This is the Celtics Lab podcast, so we don't have to dwell on it. I am going to pause the action and talk about our friends over at FanDuel, and then we will hop into the lab portion of the programming. And we will talk all about the 2023 draft and the number 20, 35 pick, which the Boston Celtics, for the moment, anyways, own. Baseball season is in full swing, and there's no better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Because right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just go to FanDuel.com/Boston to join today. I have to say, betting on this baseball season feels impossible because first it's the Cincinnati Reds, and now maybe the Phillies are going to get hot, and I don't really have a bead on this. Brian, who's your baseball team? I don't think I know that.
I'm a lifelong New York Mets fan to the point where a crying Mr. Met tattooed on my arm. So
beautiful.
Yeah, I'm actually from LA. So being a Mets fan is especially weird. But I live here now, and they're awful.
Yep, they are. It's a good word to describe it. Well, anyways, whether it's the Mets or any other baseball team or any other summer sport for that matter, don't miss a chance to snag a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/Boston to sign up. FanDuel, official partner of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. You must be 21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit is required. Refund is issued as a non-withdrawable bonus bet that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Hope is here. Gambling help. Line ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. Go to GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. Okay, Brian. The Boston Celtics have the number 35 pick in the 2023 NBA draft. And unless they are being really, really sneaky, we don't really think that they're looking at trading up. Although anything's possible. Again, they don't operate in a vacuum. I mean, it depends on what the other teams are going to be up to. It's also the new CBA. Everyone is kind of feeling out what that means and how valuable long-term price fixed assets matter. I'll just say off the jump, because this is like really my only contribution to the conversation, and then I'm just going to kind of quarterback that for people who were curious, here's some notable number 35 picks in recent NBA history: Draymond Green, Nemanja Bjelica, DeAndre Jordan, Glenn Davis, PJ Tucker, Carlos Boozer, and Rick Mahorn. And then plenty of other guys I'd never heard of. So you can certainly make magic with the 35 pick. You can also, like most picks, swing and a miss, or you can find a fine player too. Anyways, Brian, before we get into the types of players or the names that might make sense for Boston in this position, is there any chance that you think they move up or back or out entirely?
Yeah, there's a chance. I mean, let's say, especially with, Andre Jackson, who's the guy who I have being mocked to the Celtics right now, they decide that they really have him as the guy. They fell in love with him during the workout that he had with them. And they're like, you know what? We really think he's the one. And they're getting rumors that he's going to go at 27, 28. Sure. Why not? You know, throw in Peyton Pritchard, we talked about earlier, and move up to get him. Peyton wants it anyway. Maybe mm-hmm. throw in a future, you know, conditional pick somewhere or a couple second rounders and move up. Because if you're only moving up a few picks at that point, it's not the end of the world. And you're still getting the guy you want. And I could see, I mean, Andre Jackson just won a national championship. Like, I could see why a team maybe fell in love with him, a different team fell in love with him during the pre-draft process enough so that he's a first round pick in their eyes, especially if you believe in that jumper potentially coming around eventually. I mean, he's definitely a first round pick. If you buy him as a guy with a jumper, then he's probably a top 15 or top 20 player in this class. Now, most people do not buy that he'll ever get a jumper. And in that case, he is closer to where the Celtics are picking in the early second round. But he can do everything else. And so I think that, if the Celtics fall in love with one of those guys and they're available a little bit ahead, or maybe they start seeing a guy falling and they're like, you know what? We really liked our conversation with Trayce Jackson-Davis, but realistically, like, we can maybe get him at 45. We don't need to use the 32nd pick or whatever the Celtics have on him right now. So, I think there's always an option to trade up, trade out. Wouldn't be surprised at all, and wouldn't be disappointed, I think, for the fan base, you know, to see any of those options happen, because I think that for me in this draft class, after a certain number, they're all kind of in the same range for me. And yeah, obviously there's different tiers to everything, but there are guys who some evaluators might have at 32 and some might have it 45, and some might have it 15. And I would probably say to each of them, like, I see your point. I can see why you would feel that way. Kind of just depends on, you know, who's drafting and what the fit is and why you might like that guy, based off of the conversations that you've had and based off of the evaluation models that you use. And so, you know, I think I've got my ways of evaluating prospects that make certain guys pop, and I'm sure the Celtics do too. So I'm very sure the Celtics do too. They are actually an NBA team, and I am just a blogger for the most part. So yeah, I think that I would not be surprising to see Boston make some moves. But if I'm looking at teams that are going to make moves, if I'm going to power rank them, Boston is like 17th in terms of most likely to do something on draft night. Like, they're not one of the teams that I'm really expecting to make a splash or move up or move, you know, move out or whatever it is. You know, I think, you know, teams like Houston and Indiana and Portland and just across the board, I think they're just other teams that I would project more likely to do that.
Sure. Brian, we have a bunch of names that I want to ask you about specifically, but Justin, just based on what you know about the team and also if you've heard any reporting as such, what kinds of players do you think Boston is targeting with this pick? And specifically, what kinds of players are they not targeting?
Well, they're not targeting guards, which considering the makeup of the roster and where they're going to be drafting, makes a lot of sense. They don't need, I mean, they have two guys that we just talked about, Juhan Begarin and Yamadar, who are not going to be playing in summer league because there's literally no reason for them to. They're not going to come over and play any meaningful minutes on this particular iteration of the ball club. That could potentially change, but honestly, I would be more surprised or more expecting to see them part of a draft deal, draft day deal to move up or down, something like that, because mm-hmm. those kinds of players eventually might be useful for a team trying to save some money on some depth pieces. But what they have been doing is working out wings and bigs, which are what the team needs. So, I mean, that's kind of just like a no-brainer right there. They are planning intelligently for depth needs for people who would be older players, as Brian talked about earlier, who have some experience and could conceivably do something on the court for them this year.
I don't know why they have Justin Champagne. I mean, they're fine. Brian, I have some names in particular to ask you about, but first let me pause the action again and talk about our friends over at BetterHelp, which is a sponsor, excuse me, that we're happy to work with. What they do is they help you in that lifelong process of kind of growing and changing and getting to know yourself. And that starts by an online survey to match you with using a questionnaire to match you with a therapist, a licensed therapist. And importantly, you can switch at any time. And so it gives you the flexibility to, you know, deepen your self-awareness. It gives you the flexibility to talk about when times are tough. It gives you the flexibility to talk about when things are going well. As we've discussed in these ad reads before, therapy is not just about doom and gloom or when there are storm clouds, but it can be when things are bopping and you just need someone to help you scaffold your thinking. So we're happy to partner with BetterHelp, and we think that it's a service that really makes it easy to get into online therapy in a flexible, convenient way. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. Again, it's entirely online, it's convenient, it's flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. So discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/selflab and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/selflab. Okay, Brian. Andre Jackson is a kid from UConn who's a wing, and that fits, I think, what we think, which is wings and bigs are going to be a theme here. I have a few names. I'll go through them. You can give me 10 seconds or 10 minutes, depending on how excited you are for this person potentially becoming a member of the Boston Celtics. Tell me about Jordan Walsh, who's a wing from Arkansas.
Yeah. First, let me talk a little bit about Andre Jackson, if you don't mind, because I do really like that fit.
I don't mind.
Yeah. I think Andre, you know, we touched on him for a second beforehand just in the abstract about why a team might want to trade up. But, you know, he is one of those guys who could do everything. You know, I actually compared him like an efficient version of Russell Westbrook in terms of what Russell Westbrook was this year, which is like a very strange comparison, because when you think Russell Westbrook, you think of the MVP or you think of like the worst version of him when he was just chucking shots. But he was a low usage, maybe not efficient, because he's not actually efficient as a scorer, but he's not going to be taking as many shots as Westbrook. He doesn't want the ball as much. But in terms of like athleticism and will to win and just give 110% and defense. And my favorite thing about Jackson is his playmaking. I think he's one of the best transition assist guys in this draft class, if not number one. And that's on the wing. So, you're going to have some tertiary playmaking there. He is one of the leaders in like passes per touch. So he's going to keep that ball moving, even though he's not going to be your true point guard, I don't think. He's going to be someone where the ball doesn't stop when you when it gets to him. It's going to keep the ball moving, find the open shooter. That's what happened with UConn on their run to the national championship, setting up a lot of actions for Jordan Hawkins, who I think is the best movement shooter in this class. And I think you put Jackson with somebody like Tatum or Brown or shoot, even Sam Hauser, honestly, and you can get some really nice stuff going on in the minutes that they're playing. Jordan Walsh is somebody who I've been a lot lower on than consensus throughout the entire process. He's somebody who, to me, doesn't really pop analytically. The numbers just don't have anything that really suggests this is like somebody who's really just a sleeper hiding in plain sight. It's just at that point, how much you believe in the high school productivity and how much you believe in what you've seen on film, because there are flashes with him. And I think that Boston has drafted that way in the past. You've seen guys who, were McDonald's All-Americans who slid in the draft a little bit. I think, Romeo Langford was a pick like that, if I remember correctly. And I think we've seen Boston kind of use that in the past. Now, I'm not sure if that was more of a Danny Ainge thing or if that was somebody else in Boston's front office that valued that kind of thinking, but Walsh fits that category. He, like Jackson, is somebody who with a jumper, is a top 20, 25 guy in this class. I've talked to scouts who don't have him in their top 60. And so I
Oh,
think,
interesting.
yeah, I think with Walsh, it really depends on how much he wants it, and his work ethic and how much he's willing to put in. And candidly, like, I don't know. Like, I've never met Jordan Walsh. I've never spoken to him. I've not. He was not one of the prospects that I interviewed. But he's not also somebody who I've heard. Like, there's some prospects where you start asking scouts like, who's somebody that you've heard is like sleeping in the gym, and his name isn't one of the names that I've heard mentioned. But that doesn't mean he's not doing that. I think that Jordan Walsh comes down to just how much he wants it, and I think that. There are a lot of guys we've seen drafted in the second round who have really exceeded their expectations. Draymond Green at 35 being one of them, because Draymond was a lunatic who wanted it a ton. And so, if Jordan Walsh is really going to put in that effort to improve his jumper, he's got the physical tools to be a really special NBA player. He is huge. I mean, I could probably pull up his measurements if I have one moment to do it. But when I was, texting people who were at the combine, a lot of people were saying Jordan Walsh looks every bit the measurements that he is. And so what I got here is 6'6" in socks, 7'2" wingspan. He's got 33-inch standing vert, which is 91st percentile, 10.83-second lane agility, which is 86th percentile. So fast, vertical pop, long, 204 pounds. So he's got some build to him. His closest physical comps, according to Stadium Speak, are Kelly Oubre Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, guys who Herb Jones, guys who played, high level in the NBA, especially on the defensive end. So I think that Jordan Walsh has the physical build to make it work. And if he wants to, get to that next level, I think that, it's up to Boston to see if he's there. But I think, candidly, like, I do think he'll be on the clock, or I think he'll be available when Boston's on the clock. And at that point, he's one of the highest recruits, recent, who from last year, who will still be available. So Boston should at least consider it.
Yeah, and Boston is a bona fide contender with a really great G League team. So it seems to me that I
JD
don't know.
Davison fits that too, right?
Right. Yeah, something of either a, it feels kind of icky to call a kid a project, but someone who's a little more raw. Boston has the infrastructure and the timeline take a chance on that, maybe more than other teams. Okay, let's talk about this kid from Princeton. He's a forward, and I'm procrastinating trying to say his name.
We'll just call him
Tosun.
Tosin. Yeah.
It's
I think it's to Tosun. Let
two
me.
it's okay. Yeah, I got
Was
you.
it not Tosun? I mean, is it not Tosun?
I mean, I could say I would you want to give it a shot?
I want to give it a
Okay,
shot. Is
go
Tosun
for it.
right? Give me the, is Tosun
I
right?
think it's Tucson.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Well, then I'm out. I bail. You go.
It's Tucson Awoma.
Awoma, I would never have guessed that.
Oh man, thank you for saving me, Brian. My name is Teba Tabai. I'm allowed to poke fun at people's names. I've decided. Okay, Tucson. Apologies, kid from Princeton. Off we go.
Yeah, Tucson Awoma was one of my breakout stars of the March Madness process. I did a little video on him. I don't really think he got the shine that he deserved for that Princeton team that really made a run, and you know, knocked off some real contenders. I believe they beat Purdue, and I think that he was a huge part of that. You know, he is a point forward. He's one of the guys that kind of like Andre Jackson pops analytically for me for that exact reason, because he is tall and long and can play make. He would have massively high usage rate at Princeton, so that would not be the case at you know, the Celtics. And I think he could potentially be available as an undrafted free agent as well. But at the same time, like, I think I am going to be a firm believer that he's a draftable player. 6'7" in socks, 7'1" wingspan. He's somebody who's standing vert, 30.5 inches, with 72nd percentile. So he's got some athleticism. His physical comps are Kenneth Faried, Trevor Ariza, Luol Deng, and I think that, you know, really for me, it's just that playmaking, and that defensive versatility. He's not Draymond Green, because you hear height and you hear playmaking and you hear defense and you think Draymond Green, but I think he's in that same mold as somebody like a Draymond Green or a Jeremy Sochan, or you know, one of those guys who can come in and you know, sort of play almost like a Jay Crowder-y type of a role. He's got to hit that jump shot as well. And he's older. Like, he's definitely one of the older prospects in this class. And I think he could play so many different positions. He's just somebody who I think is just a good bench depth guy. So at the end of the day, I think that he's a really interesting guy, man. I mean, he's British, from the United Kingdom, Ivy League, which is obviously, you know, rare as well. So British Ivy League prospect. It's just, you know, he's got a different story than the rest of the players. And yeah, I think that he's somebody who I would definitely take as a pick. Or at least a hard look at as an undrafted free agent, if I were in a front office.
Interesting. All right. Let's keep it moving. We got Jalen Slauson next on our list. What do you know about Jalen?
Yeah, Jalen Slauson was a huge breakout star for me in the tournament, but I had him as actually as somebody who I had on my mock in 2022 out of Furman. He's somebody who, if you ever use the website Bart Torvik and use the queries they have to be like guys who have reached this threshold of defensive rebounds and this and this and that, they love Jalen Slauson. He is somebody who just beats every possible like check mark you could want out of a prospect. He fills up a stat sheet. He's also one of the older prospects in this class. But you know, he's also, I think, one of the most versatile and one of the most efficient. You know, he went on a personal 9-0 run against Virginia during the first game of the tournament, when Furman beat Virginia, which was a huge upset. You know, he had a 3-1, and one of my favorite stats about him is he's one of just 8 players in college basketball since 2008 to record at least 100 dunks and 300 and 100 three-pointers while in college. So to me, to reach those
That's pretty good.
thresholds of both 100 dunks and 100 three-pointers suggests that you can shoot and you're athletic. And I want both of those things. For a guy who I want in my rotation, who can just play spot minutes, give me the guy who can shoot and is athletic. He'll probably be able to hold his own. He's got a good block rate, good steal rate, good assist rate, good advanced stats for like box plus minus, that kind of thing. You know, he's going to be one of the older guys in the class, for sure, as well. But somebody who I think is just worth drafting. And I think he's going to find his way onto an NBA roster sooner or later, even if he's not someone who hears his name called on draft night. I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of those guys who's like, you know what, don't draft me. I'll sign with where I want to sign. Like Austin Reaves did a couple of years ago, or Fred VanVleet did as well. I mean, both those guys obviously wanted to be drafted, but were able to choose their destiny a little bit too. So I would definitely keep an eye on Jalen Slauson. The Celtics brought him in for a workout, and I think he's really just somebody who's worth considering because he checks a lot of boxes.
I have to say, the Austin Reaves getting shoe deal is so wacky to me, but I really like the shoes. So I guess the proof's in the pudding. Brian, any other players in this category that either you think Boston is looking at or has worked out with or talked to or ought to get that done sometime between now and Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the guys that they're looking at seem to be strong defense guys. You know, the guys that we mentioned were all strong defense guys. Another guy that's a really strong defender is Leaky Black, from UNC, who is another older prospect who was a a long time strong defender. Oscar Tshiebwe is a National Player of the Year who they brought in as well. That's at least worth considering. Chris Livingston was a 5-star recruit out of Kentucky. I'm not a huge believer in Chris Livingston. I don't really tend to like guys who haven't been productive in college at all. But 5-star guy who's got the right athletic build, and he decided to keep his name in the draft, I imagine, for a reason. So when you can get a highly touted prospect like that in the second round, it's at least worth considering. But yeah, I mean, I think that we've touched on some good guys. I think that Trayce Jackson-Davis from Indiana is the other one that I would really consider as well as like a top, marquee guy. He's another guy who kind of is in that sort of Memphis Grizzlies-y type of mold where it's like can do a little bit of everything. Good playmaking at the position in the front court. Can't really shoot, unfortunately, but is very efficient when he's on the court. And he's just somebody who I think could be like a real, veteran type personality, without necessarily having a veteran experience in the NBA. He kind of fits to me in that like Jeremiah Robinson, Earl, Xavier Tillman type of mold of just power forwards who came into the league and you think they've played the league 5, 10 years already, even though they've have been in the league like 1 or 2 years only. I think that Trayce is kind of next in that lineage. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
We have a few more names on our list, Brian. I'll keep picking your brain, but Justin, is there anyone either that we have talked about that you all down on or remaining in our notes that tickles your fancy?
I really like the idea of Toussaint. I'll have to get used to saying his name. Obviously, as a UConn junkie, I'm a big Andre Jackson fan. I don't think he's going to be drafted just because he's kind of in a weird tweener mold. He's a little too short to be the kind of guy that really has a better chance of making it in the NBA, but his touch around the rim is so good, and he's another UConn guy, which of course, makes me incredibly biased. Adama Sanogo is someone I think the Celtics should keep an eye on as an undrafted guy for that new third two-way player development slot.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sanogo has the best touch at the rim in this class. At least the numbers suggest as much. Like he really is an awesome rim finisher. Between him and Oscar Tshiebwe, like yeah, it's worth at least considering because Tshiebwe has got some of the best rebounding instincts you'll ever encounter, and Sanogo has some of the best touch around the rim you'll see. I don't necessarily think I'd use a draft pick on either of them, but I would definitely keep an eye on both of them for undrafted free agents. Was there anybody else that you just mentioned just now?
I
There's the
talked
one down
about
on the UConn
Tucson.
guys.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Get them out of the way so we can talk about the people they might actually draft or take.
Yeah, Brian, any other names? Well, my computer's screaming that my internet is unstable. Any other names on your list that might end up in a Boston Celtics uniform or a Maine Celtics uniform?
Yeah, one guy that I think you guys should be looking at is Jaime Hawkins Jr. If he's still available. A lot of the intel on him is that he's killed it during the pre-draft process. But he's just somebody who I think is a winner. And I know that that's something that kind of I didn't really believe in before I became more of a draft guy. In the last few years, the more I've really followed this, the more I've been like, no, that's a real thing. There's winning players and there's losing players, and I think Jaime Jaca is a winning player. He's got he's just to me, I think he just projects as such a great glue guy at the next level. Might not necessarily be somebody you're gonna have as one of your first seven guys in your rotation necessarily. But I think, in the minutes he's on the court, he's gonna provide valuable minutes. And I think that, he's somebody who scored a lot from the post when he was in college. It's not gonna really be the way he's gonna be able to score in the NBA. But at the same time, he's just somebody who I think is gonna translate. He's gonna find a way. So if he's available, I would take a hard look at Jaime Jaquez out of UCLA.
Also, another Triple J. Great name. All right, Brian, you've been working hard enough, and also we kind of have similar bosses, that I'm gonna clear the way, and I'm gonna let you plug everything you've been working on for the past week and what you'll be working on Thursday. So tell the people where they can find you.
I am at For the Win, ftw.usatoday.com. I have been hosting a show called Prospect Park, which has been really fun. I've had conversations with several draft prospects, including Omax Prosper, Derek Lively, Chris Murray, Noah Clowney, Nick Smith Jr., Max Lewis, and Brandon Podchemski. So I think that's nine for this class. Usually I've done more, but this year we got videos produced for all of them, which has been great. And we've got on camera interviews with each of these guys, and good information and stats about them for scouting reports. So if you're interested in any of those prospects, got a lot of information for you there. I'll have mock drafts between now and Thursday as well, and then I'll be off the red carpet for the draft, and we'll have some access to some players beforehand, including something tomorrow with, I said, I think Grady Dick. And I think there should be some more stuff on Thursday that I don't know what will happen yet, that I'll have more stuff though, because I'll be there. So we'll figure it out when it happens. But yeah, until then, just following the NBA draft cycle for the win at usatoday.com.
Okay, hold
Yeah,
on. A
if you need
Prospects Park
draft.
is a pod is a podcast.
It is not a podcast. It's just like a video series that I've been doing for Twitter and for YouTube and for Instagram and for our WordPress.
Well, looks like we just lost Cameron. But let me go ahead and say that if you want like more detailed information about the NBA draft, that's exactly where you want to go. Your past interviews have been invaluable to me. I mean, we talked about one of them today with Beef Stew. I encourage everyone to jump out and go on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle exactly again? Just can you spell it out so we can find you
It's
there too?
my exact name. So if you see it in the description, that's probably easier. Brian Kobrowski.
Am I back? Do I have audio and video?
Yes, you are.
Brian, Prospects Park is such a funny name. That's all I wanted to say. That's for
Yeah.
non-coastal elites. Brian lives in Brooklyn, and there's a Prospect Park. We're talking about draft prospects. That is categorically the best name you could have come up with. I'm so happy my internet kicked back on so that I could
Thank
compliment you
you.
as emphatically as I feel that.
I appreciate it. It is worth noting that I did come up with the name myself, and you are the only one to comment on it at all. No one
Yeah.
has said anything. I think they just kind of thought it was I think everybody just thought it was just like just an alliteration, but no, it's a reference, obviously. And
Yeah.
I have not had anybody besides you say anything positive about it. So thank you for that.
Two peas in a pod, baby. That good Celtics lab is fine and easy to understand, but Prospects Park is okay. I'm so happy that my internet came back so I can tell you that face to face. All right, so check out Brian's work. I think we've made it clear where to find him, and we've made it clear that he's the guy for you this week. This episode of the Celtics Lab Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive dream partner of the CLNS Media Network and BetterHelp. You deserve to be happy, Brian. We will see you, I'm sure, on Twitter on Thursday, maybe in Vegas this summer, and if not, in the funny pages. Thanks for coming on.
Sounds good. Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime.
All right, everyone. We'll see you with the see you next episode. We'll talk about whatever happened with this pick. Until then, like and subscribe, and adios.